Teaching retreats is all just ad lib, by the way. Just play it by ear. Ajahn Sumedho, and Ajahn Chah too, I think, he said, well, just, when you don't know what to say, just start talking about the weather. And something comes out. So, one of the images that comes to mind now for me is that I have a friend in Cambridge. Now, he's died long ago, but there is a Cambridge near Hamilton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he was from Cambridge, and he on his mantle, he had four pictures. Ajahn Chah, Ramana Maharshi, Ramakrishna, Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa was his karma yogi. Ramakrishna was his bhakti yogi. Ajahn Chah and Ramana Maharshi were his Janani yogis. So for those of you who don't know what all that means, karma yoga is the yoga of service. And India is quite, and Buddhism comes from India, and India has a really kind of broad philosophy of religious practices, and you find different beings finding different channels of expression and religious practice. So Mother Teresa was a karma yogi, and her work was self-service. And I know she was controversial about birth control and so on, but if you just kind of get your mind out of, you know, away from that critical mode, then just kind of the work she did, say in hospice work, or was extraordinary. And she was once asked, you do so much, you know, you've created all these spaces for dying people and taking care of and dying. It's so good of you to do that for the Indian people. She was from Romania. And she said, well, I didn't do it for the people, I did it for the nuns. Think about it. Yeah, I did it for the nuns, so they would have a place to do karma yoga. I mean, it's kind of nice. So it's like selfless service as a way which actually enhances your life, rather than just as a kind of a martyrdom, huh? Or a deity. And then Ramakrishna, I don't know if you've read about him, but I think he died around 1912. He was from Calcutta. And he's just the most, only India could hold a being like this. I think in any other country he'd be medicated. He's just the most, there's a great book by Lex Hickson called A Great Swan. And he portrays this Ramakrishna's life in a most marvelous and devotional ways. So Ramakrishna was a bhakti yoga, and bhakti is devotion. So that some of the images of the birthdays that he would have in Bengal, in the villages around his ashram near Calcutta, then thousands and thousands of people just in ecstasy and chanting bhajans and doing all kind of full-on Ramakrishna, kind of Hare Krishna, Ram Ram kind of stuff. So the whole kind of realm of ecstasy and the kind of devotional side. So there is that side. And then Ajahn Chah and Sri Ramana. Ramana Maharshi, you've probably read about him, but he was a very interesting sage, where he, at the age of, I think, 17, he had the question, who dies? This question just obsessed his mind. And he was just an ordinary high school kid. The only thing extraordinary about him, they said afterwards, was that when his brother pushed him out of the bed onto the floor, he didn't wake up. Anyway, so he took this question, and he so concentrated his mind on this question, almost went into rigor mortis. But from the descriptions of his realization, then he realized something so profoundly enlightening that he never really, he remained constant in that realization. And then so he went down to Arunachala in South India and lived on that mountain. There's a big ashram there. And he basically just kind of got around in a little dhoti, got a little diaper outfit that they have in India, and taught the same thing. And his way of teaching was what they call "Who am I?" The kind of way of investigation. And then he was one of the most, he was contemporary to Ajahn Mun. And he died about the same time as Ajahn Mun, 1950-ish. And Nehru was his disciple. All of India came then. And he lived a life of poverty. And his way was really much satsang, which is the Indian way of the teacher, just hanging out with the teacher, which was a lot with Ajahn Chah too, I think. He just hung out with him. And they talk about Sri Ramana, where he'd be on a kind of raised platform and talking with people, and then he'd get tired, just sleep for 2 hours in front of everyone, and get up again, like totally unselfconscious. Can you imagine? Like, if I just fell asleep here. Anyway, that's just a minor thing. But anyway, he's a very inspiring Indian saint. And so they call that Jnana Yogi in the yoga tradition, or Panya, or wisdom, or insight. So that was my friend's image of Ajahn Chah too, was the kind of wisdom yogi, and that's Theravada Buddhism. But you will find in Buddhist culture, like Thailand, you will find people who have tremendous devotion, you know, that kind of devotional energy, or a tremendous sense of service. And so they're not mutually exclusive, obviously. To serve, to have the heart of devotion, to have the curiosity of insight, these are all lovely parts of a spiritual path. And they're all part of our own self-discovery. It's been really nice being here. I haven't spent much time with Ajahn Tiradhammo, so that's been really, really nice. And when monks like he and I get together, we always just kind of rejoice in Ajahn Chah stories. So he was sharing with me some of his Ajahn Chah stories, which I hadn't heard. It's just such fun. And like any family, you know, we're a fraternal family, and we have a we kind of talk about, you know, Uncle Joe and Auntie Mabel and, you know, Cousin Louie, and just the same as any family. So one of the stories which I just heard about Lumpo Liam. Lumpo Liam is the abbot of Wat Nongpapo, where Ajahn Chah, the monastery Ajahn Chah started. And Lumpo Liam was asked by Ajahn Chah, before Ajahn Chah became ill, to be the abbot. And Ajahn Liam reluctantly took on that position. It was a very difficult position to try to follow in the footsteps of a great teacher like that. And he had his own style. But apparently now, again, this is a story that monks kind of really appreciate, lay people not so much. But the Patimokkha, which I spoke about earlier, the Patimokkha is high, high church, right? It's like very formal. Very ritualized, very orchestrated, very serene, very still. And that's when we chant, we recite our rules. So it's a very form, it's the formality is very beautiful, very still, very reminding. And then whenever Ajahn Chah was at the Patimokkha, then even more so. And Ajahn Chah would give a talk afterwards. So it was a very special time, every fortnight. So apparently, early in Ajahn Liam's career as a monk, Ajahn Chah said to him, and Ajahn Liam he's a builder, he loves building. He builds meditation halls here, there, and everywhere. And he's got a kind of architect's mind, and he all just does it from his head. So, and he's only got, I guess, like grade 4 education or something, formally, but the man's brilliant. Brilliant craftsman. So Ajahn Chah one day I need to check this story with Ajahn Lumpo Liam, but anyway, It's a good story. Was it said, why let truth ruin a good story, right? Anyway, this is what I heard. Less have I heard. So, Lompa Cha then one day criticized Lompa Liam for being too worldly. In I think it was a fairly kind of public situation. And, you know, when you get that from your teacher, you kind of take it on board. So next Patimokkha, apparently, they're chanting the Patimokkha. And, you know, we have these bags that are monks' bags, right? That we carry around, these brown bags. Lompa Liam gets into his bag, takes out a newspaper, starts reading the newspaper in front of the Patimokkha. You cannot do anything more outrageous than that, right? It's just... And so everyone thought, ooh, this is going to hit the fan now. You know, Ajahn Chah's really going to lay into him. Ajahn Chah didn't say anything. And they, one of the things they say, that was Ajahn Liam's lion's roar. And we have this idea of the lion's roar, you're going to make your statement about your practice. I love that story. If it was just arrogance, of course, I think Ajahn Chah would have dressed him down. But it was coming from a place of clarity and confidence in his own practice. So I guess I see it like he was kind of challenged by Ajahn Chah. He says, yeah, you think so? That's the way I read it. So it's been a nice time for me. I'm traveling around the world and I'm reconnecting with all kinds of people. So it's lovely to reconnect here and practice with all of you. We need to somehow wrap up, as they say. So I'm sure we all feel tremendous gratitude, right, to just everyone who has worked to create this place, if you think of that from the early days to now. The bhikkhus who have worked in this place, the lay people, the support from all kinds of ends of the planet. So that's a good to reflect on. Reflecting on sending gratitude to Ying here for all her work in keeping up. Poor woman, now she feels self-conscious. We're just thinking of you in gratitude, Ying. So and if you think about gratitude, it's a very settling state of mind, isn't it? It's like freedom, isn't it, in a sense? You can't force gratitude, you know, that idea you should be grateful. And so if you had a really rough time and you didn't understand a clue of what I was saying and your knees were hurting and you want to get home, you don't have to feel grateful, right? So it's not a kind of compulsion, but just a natural sense of, yeah, we're lucky to be here. It's a good place. We're well cared for. This is lovely, a lovely state of mind to manifest. And then returning to the world, I wish you well. I really do, and I hope your practice does deepen, and that, you know, you have very few problems, and all those problems that you do have are edifying and bring you insight. I wish you good health, freedom from confusion, freedom from fear, freedom from anxiety. But most importantly, I wish you realization of Nibbana, because I think that's a really interesting one. So perhaps we could finish by doing the five precepts and then some chanting. So if you get, for those who you'd like, you don't have to take the five precepts, but for those who would like to take them, we could maybe turn to the precepts. So this is not... Again, the homage to the Buddha then, refuges and precepts. Page 56, right. So remember the, like, the one of the ways to think about homage to the Buddha for me is that there was a being who realized enlightenment or moksha, and that that being had the compassion, wisdom to share it with us today, and that to me it's an optimistic statement that there is the unconditioned, the uncreated, the unoriginated, the unborn, the deathless. That there is freedom, there is profound freedom. So whenever I think of Buddha in that kind of sense, there's this tremendous sense of possibility, and then gratitude and devotion because of that. So that's the way I reflect on Namo Tassa. And then the refuges themselves, just a usual reminder, Bhutang Saranang Gacchami is the awake mind, and Dhammang Saranang Gacchami is the mind knowing the mind. You get that? Bhutang Saranang Gacchami is the awake, and then the mind knowing the mind is Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. I'm feeling anxious about going to work tomorrow. I awaken, and then I look at the mind, feeling the mind. That's taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma. It's a bit abstract. It doesn't work not to worry, but it's a kind of formula for the spiritual practice in Buddhism. And then Sanghang Saranang Gacchami is the life. It's the good life. It's the good life that we live. Dutiyampi and Tatiyampi. And then just to remind you, the precepts, I undertake the precept to refrain from destroying living creatures and non-violence. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. Nice formulation for that, not just stealing, that which is not given. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct, so fidelity. I undertake the precept to refrain from incorrect speech, so now you can talk. For those of you who have been practicing noble silence, now you can talk. And I undertake the precept to refrain from intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness. So when you take the precepts and the refuges, it's a kind of, you make an adhitana, you make a determination in your mind. We're going to try to use these ideas and suggestions and moral rules to be more aware and refine my life in a good way. Right, so because some of you are unfamiliar with the Pali, if you go to 56, and those who would like to take it, you could maybe bow three times first. You could start. And on top of 56, if you see the asterisk, Mayang becomes Ahang if you're taking it individually. So I'll just do it word by word. If you repeat after me then. Ahang Bante Tisaranena Saha Pancha Silani Yajami Duttiyampi Ahang Bante Tisaranena Saha Pancha Silani Yajami Tatiyampi Ahangpante Tisaranena Saha Pancha Silani Yajami. And then repeat after me. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Page. Bhutang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami. Tisarana gamanam nititam. Flip the page. Panatipata. Veramani. Sigapadam. Samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from destroying living creatures. Adinadana. Veramani. Sigapadam. Samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. Kamesu Michachara Veramani Sikapadang Samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. Musawada Veramani Sikapadang Samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from incorrect speech. Suramiraya Maja Pamadatana Viramani Sikapadang Samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness. Imani panchasi kapadani silena supatinyanti silena boga sampata silena niputinyanti tasama silang sotaye. Sato, sato, sato. So we need to finish. Let's just finish with the chant and then homage, I guess. What should we do? Meta chant? Who want to lead it? Finish with a chant. He's got a good voice.